This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
So asphyxia deaths are difficult and do require, you know, thorough investigation.
We'll go through Dr. Jimbelick's opinions on Damien's case, as well as hear about her own journey with a challenging death investigation.
The case came in as a suicide, or as a potential suicide. It's never, like, officially labeled.
How did Dr. Jimbelick handle that investigation? And what can it tell us about possible avenues for further examination of Damien's case?
In this case, I had a strong belief she was killed prior to being hung up, but I couldn't prove that.
Plus, I'm excited to announce that on May 10th, I'm launching Season 2 of Final Days on Earth with a brand new case that I'll reveal at the end of this episode. Stay tuned! From Cold Case Productions, this is Final Days on Earth, The Life and Death of Damien Hurd. Episode 15, New Leads, Part 2. I'm your host, Claire Sanima. Thanks for listening. When I started this podcast, I said I would follow Damien's story wherever it took me, and one of the places it led was to a criminologist in Australia. Dr. Claire Ferguson specializes in staged homicides and is one of the world's leading experts in the field. Her research highlighted several key areas of interest in Damien's case, including the fact that his jewelry had been removed, there was no cash in his wallet, his car appeared to be ransacked, and he had recently been in a heated series of arguments. For an in-depth look at Dr. Ferguson's research and its relationship to Damien's case, listen to Episode 13, Part 2, New Research, as we are only going to hit the highlights here.
One of the things that I'm often banging on about when I'm presenting this research to police is that generally the autopsy is not going to be particularly helpful in these types of cases. So generally speaking, you have offenders who will use the actual thing that caused the death, so the weapon or whatever, to stage the scene. And so what that means is that generally speaking, the findings from the autopsy don't really tell investigators anything that they don't already know. And so what does solve these cases generally is like boots on the ground police work and thinking in detail about context. So that would be the main thing, I guess, is to not put all your eggs as an investigator in the autopsy basket or in the forensic evidence type of basket. The other main misconception that I see a ton is people saying, and offenders often bank on this actually, is investigators saying or people involved saying, oh, but an offender wouldn't do that. A murderer wouldn't do that. That type of thinking can be very problematic because, as I said, the offender is hoping that investigators will think, oh, no one would go that far, or no one would bother doing that. And they sometimes bother for that specific reason.
In Damien's autopsy, his cause of death was determined to be asphyxiation by hanging, and the manner was suicide. One of the suggestions Dr. Ferguson made to me for further analysis of Damien's case was to contact a forensic pathologist. Dr. Ferguson was especially interested in the petechiae on Damien's body and possible explanations for it.
Petechiae are pinpoint hemorrhages in the skin.
This is Dr. Mary Jimbelick.
It can be seen in the eyes and in the skin. In deaths that are caused by losing oxygen, you can see them more frequently.
Jim Bellick is a retired forensic pathologist who served as chief medical examiner and clinical associate professor of pathology in Syracuse, New York.
I've performed thousands of autopsies, including their investigations to determine the cause and manner of death. And I have a special interest in staged death scenes as well, and published an article with Vernon Gebberth in Practical Homicide Investigation demonstrating that very thing in a hanging death.
The case Dr. Jim Bellick is referring to appears in Chapter 22 of Practical Homicide Investigation. It deals with an 11-year-old girl who was found hanging from a dog chain tied to her bedpost.
The case came in as a suicide, or as a potential suicide. It's never, like, officially labeled. My feeling was it was a homicide, but I didn't have enough information to label it that way and proceed. I needed more information. And also there was some pushback that, you know, how do you know this isn't a suicide? So I then invoked the right of all medical examiners to reach out for other professional opinion, you know? Okay, yeah. Maybe I'm not seeing something clearly here. So I did. I reached out to several nationally known and respected medical examiners and asked for their professional opinions on the case.
Dr. Jim Bellick solicited 4 outside opinions from other medical examiners on the child's manner of death. They came back with 3 opinions of homicide and 1 suicide. That might sound like an overwhelming majority, but in the world of autopsies, it still left room for interpretation.
And so, based on the pushback, based on it wasn't unanimous, that I couldn't say within a reasonable degree of medical certainty, which is what I need to say when I sign something on a death certificate, I made the manner of death undetermined, which is always an option that medical examiners have that leaves the door open for suspicious, you know, deaths of a suspicious nature, but you can't quite prove, which almost feels like that's where it was headed, you know, with Damien, but didn't get labeled that way.
Right.
Because that, you know, none of us as medical examiners like to put it in a category which basically is like a shrug, I don't know, you know. But it's not really when you say undetermined. When you say undetermined, it means, oh, I really feel it is going down this path, but I don't have enough concrete evidence to say so. And in this case, I had a strong belief she was killed prior to being hung up, but I couldn't prove that.
Police and prosecutors had brought in the case as a potential suicide, but after extensive study, Jim Bellick classified the hanging death as undetermined. In this case,
you know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
The autopsy revealed that the girl had been sexually assaulted before her death, and the chain used to hang her had been tied in an elaborate manner, showing design and sophistication that would not be expected from a child. The girl's father was later convicted of sexual assault and sentenced to 50 years. A judge, however, ruled that the manner of death was not admissible in the case.
With hanging and strangulation, so things placed around the neck. The mechanism is that the vessels on the side of the neck are constricted with pressure so that blood isn't flowing properly in or out of the head, and ultimately it causes a lack of oxygen to the brain. So the airway's open, you can breathe, but you have the vascular supply pressure on the vascular supply. So if you are staging a death and you hang up the person, you're going to get marks on the neck. Or if someone hangs himself, you're going to get marks on the neck from that. When you say undetermined in a circumstance like that, it means, yeah, I can't tell if the person was killed by some asphyxial means and then hung up or not. That's what you're saying.
Author and investigator Vernon Gayberth pointed out a number of, quote, red flags in the police work in Jembelic's case, especially concerning the parents' changing statements about the timeline of their daughter's death. Initially, the mother told police she had seen her daughter alive after the father had left the house for work, but the father said he was the last person to see his daughter alive. I've noticed that in complex cases, diligent investigators often employ polygraph tests as a crime-solving tool. Gayberth writes, the detectives properly requested the father to take a polygraph examination. The parents' accounts continued to change as the investigators requested clarification and attempted to establish a timeline. It is obvious that there was collusion on the part of the mother and father to confuse and mislead the police with their contradictory and inconsistent accounts. I told Dr. Jembelic that one of the elements of her case that stood out to me was the police's use of polygraph examination on witnesses, an investigative tool that was never employed in Damien's case.
In the Gayberth case, the police, once they had all these inconsistent statements, they did a polygraph on the father, and he failed it. There were no polygraphs taken in Damien's case to see if deception was indicated.
Right.
And it seems like a missed opportunity, just as an investigative tool.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. I think there could have been a little more on the investigative aspect of it.
I feel like this responsibility because people keep contacting me and bringing up other things, and I'm like, I want to, close the loop as much as I can on Damien's case. And, I mean, really, as you presented, the best case scenario in my mind would be if the medical examiner would rule it undetermined and allow, open the door for the police to do these other investigative steps, then it could complete it in a way that would be much more satisfying. Whatever the conclusion might be.
Exactly.
I asked Dr. Jembelic to look at Damien's case file, including the autopsy and scene photos. After reviewing them, she said there was nothing about Damien's body that raised her alarm bells for foul play.
There's no injuries on the body of any significance beyond the hanging. There are petechial hemorrhages in the face. Those are seen when, the blood is maybe pumping from the carotids still into the head, but not draining as well back through the venous system, and so you get these little burst blood vessels there. But that's consistent with the ligature, that's consistent with the hanging. Also, there doesn't seem to be struggle on him, around him, or even with the ligature itself. It's a very clean mark from being placed around the neck and then the person dying.
I told Dr. Jembelic about two alternate theories of asphyxiation, based on witness statements from events at the party. The idea that Damien was accidentally rendered unconscious with a chokehold, or through the use of an oxygen deprivation mask that was present at the party. I asked her if she thought Damien's injuries would present differently if either one of those methods of asphyxiation had been employed before his body was hung in a jumper cable noose.
And that's the one thing that is kind of curious with him, with that situation, because that's what people are alleging, that, yeah, that went awry. And then they didn't know what to do. So whether it was a chokehold or whether it was this face mask, oxygen deprivation mask, same idea, and with asphyxia, asphyxia doesn't leave much in the way of findings. One thing that you become suspicious about are petechial hemorrhages, but they're not pathognomonic. You know, they're not the exact, you know, the bullet in the body. You know, they are there, and they can be there from different types of asphyxia, and sometimes they can be more prominent when the blood vessels are congested with something around the neck. But by themselves, they may suggest something, but it's not the only thing, you know, that you need to look at. So asphyxia deaths are difficult and do require, you know, thorough investigation. I agree with you that it is complex, and I'm the first person to say we have to look, you know, leave no stone unturned, really, because the forensic pathologist in particular is the patient's advocate. We're the decedent's advocate, and we want to get the truth out. We want to know what happened to the person. They are talking to us through the scene, through their body, through the examination, through the autopsy, and so it's very important to get it right. You know, we want to hear them clearly. I guess it's just that the hanging itself is not suspicious. If all I had to look at was the scene and the autopsy, I would say I don't see anything suspicious about this. And when we sign a death certificate with the cause and the manner of death, in other words, the injury that created the death and then the how of it, how did it happen, you know, the suicide, when we sign that on a death certificate, it's within a reasonable degree of forensic certainty. So it's not 100%. I mean, it's close to as we can get, but it can be, you know, a few percent doubt there. You can't answer every single question so that it's 100% certainty. And that's true in every case. You just have to look at all of the evidence and all of the findings and put it all together and say, this is the best answer I can give within a reasonable degree of forensic certainty.
Yeah, it's an art. It's not like mathematics, right? We can't do it as simple as an accounting equation and say this is definitely 2 + 2 = 4 100% of the time.
Right. Certainly any new information that comes up or other things are evaluated, you know, can be reviewed. Things can be changed. They can be amended. The death certificate can be changed if there's new information to indicate otherwise.
In 2019, a new coroner was elected in Gunnison County after Frank Vader retired. Vader was the one who ruled Damien's case a suicide. Michael Barnes is now the chief death investigator and would have standing to review the Damien Hurd case, if he chooses to.
When I was chief, I had, you know, maybe at least a few times a year, families or doctors or police coming back to me with, hey, doc, you know this case that was ruled like this before? Can you take a look at it? So, I mean, there's nothing stopping the family, you know, who I know are unhappy with the ruling.
Right.
There's nothing stopping them from approaching the new medical examiner.
Yeah.
With a letter. Like, could you please relook at this case done by your predecessor? You know, whatever. Different information has come up since then. And I don't know. People are pretty busy, and sometimes people blow you off, and they may say no. But it's worth a shot, you know. And maybe that might get some wheels moving.
Getting Damien's cause of death reviewed by the new Gunnison County coroner is a tall order of business. But I agree with Dr. Jimbelic that it's worth a shot. One of the biggest challenges in a small-town case like Damien's is the way that so many people are intertwined. Under normal circumstances, the fact that everybody is connected is one of the reasons why people love living in a tight-knit community like Gunnison. But when controversy strikes, it can get complicated fast. Case in point, hiker Linda Nienhauser, the eyewitness who reported seeing multiple people with Damien's body at Cabin Creek before it was discovered by police. She was also a Gunnison County employee, the finance director, and when she died in 2021, her obituary mentioned Frank Vader, the coroner who ruled Damien's death a suicide, as her close friend. If you recall, Linda and Frank visited the scene of Damien's death together without law enforcement present and without recording their conversation before the ruling of suicide was determined. That decision was questionable on its own, but now knowing that Linda and Frank were close friends makes it a serious conflict of interest. According to reporting by the Gunnison Country Times, Michael Barnes worked under Frank Vader as his deputy coroner for 3 years before taking office as his hand-picked successor. Michael and Frank also worked together at Drug Test West, a Gunnison company that Michael founded. All that to say, the connections in Gunnison run deep, and any decision to go against the grain and challenge the findings in Damien's case will be a difficult one. But I'm not giving up on Gunnison officials to do the right thing. If Damien really did commit suicide, then there's nothing to be afraid of in exploring all the options. If that's the truth, then that's where all the inquiries will lead. In light of witness statements about Damien being in a chokehold before his disappearance, and because of the presence of an oxygen deprivation mask at the party, I believe his manner of death deserves to be reevaluated by the new medical examiner. Part of that review should include listening to the only recorded statement that law enforcement made with Linda Nienhauser before her death, in which she clearly stated she saw a second vehicle, two bicycles, and another person crouching near Damien's body. I believe until law enforcement can identify the owner of the white truck and question them about their presence at the scene, we will never know what truly happened to Damien Hurt and who, if anyone, is responsible for his death. Thank you so much for listening to my first season of Final Days on Earth, The Life and Death of Damien Hurt. While I'll continue to update you on developments in his case, I'm excited to tell you about my all-new second season, launching next week on May 10th. Here is an exclusive sneak peek. Jennifer Harris disappeared from Bonham, Texas on Mother's Day 2002. At just 28, Jennifer had her whole life ahead of her, but looks can be deceiving.
And so she came over and then told me, "You're not going to believe, you know, the mess I'm in."
On the final night of Jennifer Harris's life, she left the house to visit a friend. She never returned.
Have you ever known Jennifer take off?
The secrets in the Jennifer Harris case have been hidden for 20 years.
When someone disappears, you have to look at who would benefit from their disappearance.
It's time to finally discover what happened to Jennifer Harris and who is responsible for her death.
I just think that you want, just as badly as we do, to have justice.
Coming May 10th, Final Days on Earth, Season 2, The Life and Death of Jennifer Harris. Available wherever you get your podcasts. Final Days on Earth is recorded in Dallas, Texas for Cold Case Productions in partnership with Podcast One and Live by Live. Each episode is written, reported, and produced by me, Claire Sanima. Original theme music composed and performed by Riley Simmons. Songs licensed from premiumbeat.com are Bending Truth and A Thin Line. Editorial consultant is Lucy Scott of lucymedia.com. Additional production help from Amber Robinson, Janice Sue, and Elise Weber. Executive producers are Sharon Richards and me, Claire Sanima. Special thanks to Dr. Mary Jumbelik for talking to me in this episode.